Now, let me get this straight. You're willing to pay $150,000 for zombie takeout?
For this episode, yes. What's up? Welcome to episode 332 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
And also, I'll probably put this in the outtake. I just had a little mix-up with the episode number, and I just want to mention I did that last week, too. Oh, wow. I said it was episode 330, because I do my notes like weeks ahead of time. And so I had 330 because it was before we plugged in Martin for the Romero tribute. So yeah, that's why I said 330 last week, even though it was 331.
I'm just amazed at like the quantity of, you know, the higher numbers that we get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, we've really done 330 yeah. something episodes of this.
I look through the movie list sometimes and I don't remember some of them. I only know I've watched them because there's proof.
Well, yeah, back when I was working on the project, mm-hmm. I'd be like, wow, we did. I don't remember that at all. And then listen to it and like, That was a pretty fucking good episode. Mm. I need to watch that movie again.
All right, so on to some listener submitted. This is from Bodo on Twitter. He said, could use as Jaws Dave Bautista, who's in Guardians right now, or Kane, who's done horror movies. Bautista, I actually wouldn't want to waste him as Jaws, because I've seen the first Guardians, and he's actually kind of funny as Drax. Kane would be interesting, because I don't think he can really act. Kane's a wrestler.
Yeah.
He always wears a mask, big guy.
Okay.
I've never seen him without the mask, but then again, you know, Jaws is supposed to be ugly. Yeah. I just thought of this because I was watching it earlier. I want to say Rory McCann is his name. The Hound from Game of Thrones.
Oh, wow.
He'd be good as Jaws. Just thought of him.
Not the Mountain.
Or the Mountain. I don't really remember what he looked like.
Yeah, it's been some years since we've seen his face.
And Bodo also said, time for a Zilla movie, and posted a screenshot of an article about the actor who played Godzilla in the classic original Godzilla. The guy in the suit passed away. Don't remember his name, don't have it in my notes. But yeah, we should work in a Godzilla movie soon.
Yeah, we did not discuss this beforehand.
I completely blanked on it until now.
But we also lost the great Joe Bologna.
They did. I didn't hear about that.
It was over the weekend. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Excuse to watch Blame It on Rio.
You know, I was thinking that too. I guess we'd have to sit through Blame It on Rio, huh?
It's got some benefits.
Of course, the only thing I bring up when we talk about Joe Bologna, other than, of course, the big bus, is his pilot that didn't get picked up down the shore.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a Joey Lord Adams.
That was kind of a Married with Children sort of thing, if I recall correctly.
It was a Married with Children spinoff.
Oh, it was actually a spinoff. Okay, I thought they were just ripping it off.
Yes, Joe Bologna was a friend of Al Bundy's, I think. They had this thing down the shore.
And it was set in Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
Ironically, if I recall correctly, Married with Children was set in Chicago.
Yeah. I don't know how that worked.
Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1984, A Breed Apart. This is our Powers Booth tribute. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Cherokee Island. I used to go to Cherokee Island, then I took an arrow in the knee.
And also brought to you by Crossbows, the crystals of 80s weaponry. I never understood what their obsession with them was, but everyone seemed to have
one. They looked cool.
They did. All right, so where to begin with this one? All right, so we have a Vietnam vet living on his own in an island.
Well, they don't really say he's a vet. They just kind of allude to it a lot.
Oh, my God. If I heard one more helicopter thing, they were so heavy-handed with it.
There's an explanation for that. We'll get to it.
But no, they do. At the very end, he says, you know, 72.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of obvious he was a Vietnam vet. Yeah, there's no
right.
There's no subtlety button on this filmmaker's camera. So, yeah, he's living on his own in this island of his. And he loves animals. And he just wants everybody to stay away. And, well, it begins with these two hunters deciding to go to his island anyway. Now, yeah, I'll save that for the review. but of course, that's not the main conflict of this movie. It is, however, the only conflict that brings action.
Yeah, he chases off the hunters with a said crossbow. One of them takes an arrow to the knee, hence my Skyrim reference.
Yeah. And but the real conflict is, of course, a mountaineer, which I just immediately thought of Monty Python.
Yeah.
And the mountaineer sketch. Mm-hmm. And, well, he needs money for his mountaineering trip. And what better way to make that money than to steal the eggs of an endangered species bird?
Hired by Donald Pleasance, who plays a very rich egg collector.
A very rich egg collector.
He has a whole case, like, you know, a glass-covered case full of eggs.
I swear to God, this had to have been a Monty Python skit that they just... I mean, let's make a serious movie out of it. It's, yeah, it is very weird. Like, you're a mountaineer. But, well, maybe if you go to the shrubber.
I just had to wonder, what happens to unrefrigerated, unfertilized eggs after a certain period of time?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I'm sure people have egg collections.
And actually, wait, if they're in the nest, aren't they fertilized by most likely anyway, not necessarily, but... Most likely they are fertilized if they're sitting in a nest.
Yeah, I would think so.
So eventually they're going to hatch.
He must have some way of keeping them from hatching.
Logic isn't really a thing for this movie.
Yeah. he's Roger the Shrubber. And really, he might as well have gone to the Knights Crusade.
Yeah, yeah.
Put an egg right here next to the other one. No, just fine. With some shrubbery fence around it. But anyway, so he's on the job, but he discovers that our hero has, he's not good with people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this wonderful woman on the with the heart of gold who's all by herself with a kid.
Played by Kathleen Turner, probably the best cast we've seen in a long time. Or at least most A-list cast we've seen in a long time.
This cast is ridiculous. Yeah. How did they get this cast?
In a movie that got no press.
Right. But anyway, okay. So it's almost a love triangle, but I will spoil it. Powers Booth, he goes face.
Well, he's the bad guy. He can't get the girl. I mean, he's the bad guy going in, at least.
But... he doesn't get the girl because he doesn't try. He says,
he gives up.
You guys have a thing.
Yeah.
He kind of uses that as a lure to get him away, to try to get the eggs that our hero has been protecting, because mm-hmm. He loves all creatures, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, of course, has a moral dilemma, and hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a lot of strange laughter mm-hmm. ensued. And
sure. This movie was released the same year as Romancing the Stone, which
yes!
also starred Kathleen Turner, and this got no press.
This movie had to have been filmed long ago and got put out because the cast made it.
That's I didn't see anything about that.
It has to be it. How do you get Kathleen Turner 3 years after Body Heat, Rutger Hauer after, 2 years after Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Powers Booth, I mean, he wasn't a name or anything.
I don't know if he was ever really that big. He just kind of worked a lot.
I mean, this is 4 years after the Jonestown thing.
Oh, and right. Yeah, that was pretty big.
He would. I mean, if we could have reviewed that, we would have. Because, I mean, that's a fucking masterpiece of a performance, by the way, if you've ever seen it. Creepy as hell.
And Donald Pleasance, well, kind of a B-movie guy anyway, typically.
Donald Pleasance? This is like a year after the second Halloween movie.
Oh, that's right. He was in this.
He was kind of big in the early 80s because of those. He hosted Saturday Night Live.
He did. I did not know that.
Actually, it's a great one. If you ever get to see them,
I will have to look it up.
The band Fear played as the musical guests. And, you know, they just had like this crazy mosh pit on
Saturday Live. Donald Pleasance was the host and Fear was the musical guest. I need to see this episode.
Well, yeah. And it was like Belushi that was like, you know, you got to have these guys play. I think it was like 81, obviously, before Belushi's passing.
Yeah.
Or 80.
So, yeah, a great cast. Kathleen Turner, who was incredibly hot at the time. And I don't mean it in that way, though. Yes, that too.
Right.
And it got no press. And at least I don't remember it getting any press.
No. No.
And I remember seeing Romancing the Stone in the theater. So.
Of course. Well, yeah, Kathleen Turner was huge. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the only logical explanation would be, well, there's two explanations how they could have gotten this cast. One, they love, you know, they wanted to help the bald eagle, which was endangered at the time.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do a movie about it.
At the time the film was made, the bald eagle was on the brink of extinction, local.
Oh, yeah.
Or extirpation, local extinction, in the continental U.S. The bird now has a stable population and was removed from the endangered species list in 2007.
Well, I think a lot of that had to do with DDT being used, and once we stopped that, the eggshells were fine, and that was it. But the other theory, of course, is that they got all these people somehow in like a few years. Because doesn't this movie have a very 70s feel to it?
70s or kind of early 80s, too.
I mean,
it's kind of on that transition period, though it's a little later.
I would say more 70s, like more obsessed with the Southern culture back in the late 70s than the early 80s.
A little bit. Those and accents really, were really variable.
And just the overall portrayal of Southern culture is just, I mean, so far off in this movie. It's insane.
It's a stereotype. But I love that.
No, not even. It's the Southern stereotype. Is the guy on his land that you got to get off his land, or he's going to shoot you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have family that owned land that, if you swam in it, he was going to fucking shoot at you.
Wow.
They were treating it like it was this crazy thing that there was somebody living on an island in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe in North Carolina, but in Mississippi, it sure as fuck was not.
Well, they're kind of different worlds, even though they're technically both in the South.
I'm thinking that it's not that different.
NorCal's a little more northern, I think.
But still, the whole reacting like somebody is crazy for living on land on their own in the South, anywhere, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the time,
right.
It was just not going to be treated the way they were treating it in this movie. The same with being a vet.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think they were going to treat you that way in the South.
No.
I could be wrong.
And again, the accents. Kathleen Turner and Powers Booth, really variable.
Yes.
She was better than he was. His accent disappeared like halfway through the movie.
Well, yeah, I don't think Powers Booth didn't even have to be Southern, really. He was an outsider.
Right. And Rutger Hauer, of course, with his slight Dutch accent throughout the movie.
Yeah, right. He was almost, you know, the European accent instead of the Southern.
Well, he's Dutch, so it basically is the generic European accent. I think that's all kind of based in Dutch.
Yeah.
But, I mean, less than 10 minutes in, he was already making the movie for me. There's this bit where he gets back from collecting ducks, and he's got this grease paint on, very split second. A lot of it reminded me of Split Second, because his character in that is kind of a PTSD case as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
And also, just as a quick aside, there was a shot at the beginning where you see this bald eagle's face, like an extreme close-up, not, you know, a tighter close-up than you would normally see. It almost felt like CG, just because I've never seen an eagle in that kind of detail before.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it's tough to get them, especially back then when there were many around. Like how did they even do that?
And there were his audio hallucinations were just thoroughly weird. He was apparently a vet, and we only find this out initially, at least, because he will occasionally stare off and you'll get this helicopter sound and this, you know, this screaming.
Right.
The explanation for that, I think, after principal photography had finished, the film reels were sent back by plane to L.A., one of the four reels never arrived. So the film was substantially reorganized around the missing scenes, which were shot out of order, in editing. This partially explains why some subplots were incomplete and why Malden, Rutger Hauer's character, never had a backstory. So I suspect at one of those audio flashbacks, they were going to go into an actual visual flashback.
Wow.
To show that he had been in the war.
I mean, how do you finish a film that way, though?
Yeah, it didn't feel like it, aside from those flashback scenes, because I didn't notice any subplots that weren't finished up.
Well, there was the whole weirdness with the other hunter. I guess that was charged.
Yeah, that was completed. I mean, it did escalate pretty quickly. It kind of did feel like there should have been some other scenes before the fight in the store, but certainly before the assault, which was unexpectedly epic, the assault on Cherokee Island.
Yeah. Well, they wanted this whole Apocalypse Now Rambo thing that they, which was pretty fresh at the time.
Mm-hmm. And particularly the scene with when he's got the snake.
And honestly, if it wasn't for the thing with the hunters, there'd be zero action in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There'd be like the one scene where at the end where he's shooting at him while he's on the mountain. But other than that, nothing would happen other than them playing chess.
And there were these shots of dead birds that were really intense, too.
Oh, yeah. The scene where those guys must have been like the greatest shots ever to have just poached that many in that amount of time. Come on, guys.
At a waterfall. But then, you know, they go into these close-up shots of the dead birds when, you know, Jim Malden, Rutger Hauer's character, is looking at them. And then the sound, then the war sounds. It was, like I said, delightfully weird.
Right. The soundtrack for this movie is the other thing. The score just did not belong whatsoever. Like, when it started, you thought maybe you were going to watch a sci-fi movie, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, these are just dudes on a mountain, right? I did get the right movie, didn't I? Uh-huh. There are no aliens involved here. Rutger Hauer isn't the fucking, you know, Blade Runner.
And I loved his eyeglasses eye patch he had going for a while.
Yeah.
I wish that would have lasted, because it was just, you know, thoroughly left field, and it was just a nice touch for him as a character. And the tuba. For some random reason, he was learning to play the tuba.
That's right. I forgot about the tuba scene. But yeah, I mean, I didn't get the eye patch. That's obviously a reference.
Maybe it was explained in a scene that was cut, yeah.
Well, there was something that he thought he had a splinter in his eye or something like that.
I'm guessing that something happened in one of the scenes, not the cutscenes, but the scenes that were missing that explained that. I just liked it because it was weird.
But he's not very much of a survivalist if he's going to fucking kick the splinter out.
And it was nice seeing, you know, a romantic subplot involving the villain, because I knew it wasn't going to work. You know, Powers Booth and Kathleen Turner's characters get together early on. I knew they weren't going to end up together. Because he's the bad guy. So that was nice. It was made it kind of interesting. And I hated him from almost his first appearance in the movie when he says, "I want to plant the American flag on the highest peak in China."
Of course, I'm sitting here thinking, why would China let you do this?
Yeah.
No matter how much money you have, they're going to say, go fuck yourself.
Now, overall, I did like the movie, but obviously there were issues. One of them, specifically, no chemistry between Powers Booth and Kathleen Turner. Like, laughably bad chemistry.
I don't really have any problem with the actor, with the cast of the movie. It's really just the story and the direction of the story. A lot of it just did not make any sense. And finding out about this missing reel, I mean,
It explains a lot. But there were also just weird choices. Like, when the hunters were leaving the island, he shoots their engine.
Right, why would you do that?
He wants them off the island, but he shoots their engine.
Yeah.
Or this random shot where Powers Booth is changing his shirt by his car when they're, you know, when the camera's about to go into the store. You know, they needed him there to for a plot reason, but they didn't need him changing his shirt at the car.
And, I mean, if you're Powers Booth, and you want to steal these eggs, and there's one guy guarding these eggs, and you stumble upon him fighting these other dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you help him?
Yeah, he seemed to have some ulterior motive that it required ingratiating himself somehow.
But he didn't need to. He could have just been, oh, what would, no, I didn't see the gun. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. A lot easier to get the egg now.
Yeah, you know. I mean, he didn't have to kill him, but I mean, if he just got wounded and he was in a hospital somewhere, you just go and steal the eggs. Right. There's nothing there and roll the credits.
Well, that's the other reason is if he did that, they'd have to extend the movie. Right. Or they would have to find another reason to go an hour and a half.
Right. And honestly, after like the fight in the store, I was like, there's really another hour after
this? And that was just needless destruction.
Well, of course, that
I'm complaining about that, but
you have to have a fight scene that destroys everything.
You know, the reasonable thing to do in most cases is let's step outside.
Of course.
You know, they throw down right in the middle of this general store with all of these canned goods on the shelves and a whole gun rack.
And it's a small town and they're, you know, they know her, you know, they all know her. Mm-hmm. They all know each other.
Right.
Actually, the most ridiculous scene of the entire movie has to be in the beginning when the hunters were there and he's attacking them with his crossbow and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, They're holding guns.
Yeah, and they don't fire back. That's true. They don't
fire back. It made, I was like, what? Okay, sure. If only they had some sort of weapon to defend themselves against the man firing the crossbow at them. They just, I mean, cowered and fumbled around with the gun. Ran. Like, they just shoot him. Just, you know, Scott Evil, just one, right. Put one right in his head.
And the birds in the background of those scenes on the island, there was this particular bird call sounded like the beginning of the Game of Thrones theme. It was like the first three notes of the Game of Thrones theme. It threw me every time. I kept continuing the song in my head.
I've actually been to this area where it was filmed. It was filmed in like the Biltmore Estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Chimney Rock. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I've been to both of those. And yeah, it is very nice country. I didn't recognize the Biltmore Estate, but oh, that's Donald Pleasance's house.
Ah, okay, okay.
Now that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, an estate, yeah, that was a mansion.
Yeah. Oh, because that place is fucking nuts. Mm. It's like, it's this 19th century mansion with bowling alleys. And,
oh, God.
Yeah, or it might even be 18th. I'm trying to remember when they built it, the Vanderbilts. When you know the early days and just room after room, it's insane. Hmm.
I did have to wonder how Jim made a living because he lives out on this island, but he does shop at the general store. You know, gets his food there. How does he pay for it if he just lives out on this island protecting animals? You know, superheroes don't make money, and that's basically his thing. Is he's a superhero except he protects animals instead of a city, but you don't get paid for that.
He's just living off this inheritance. I mean,
oh yeah, they did mention an inheritance later.
You
in the kind movie.
Of get the impression that, well, I mean, and land probably wasn't that expensive in the 70s.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's on an island. He probably got it for $20. Who knows?
You're right.
But he still has to buy food.
Right.
Which, although, yeah, maybe the inheritance takes care of that.
He's not. He's not fishing. He's not. I guess he's not eating the animals off the island.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Because I thought about that. He could feed himself, but I don't know what would grow there in terms of crops, but he certainly would have enough meat.
Tobacco.
Mm, yeah, true.
Tobacco could grow.
But overall, there's a lot going on in this movie. There's like three separate plot lines.
It is probably one of the strangest movies we've ever done because it's an environmental morality tale, an action-adventure movie.
A love triangle, rom-com. Sort of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a buddy rom-com, too.
And I did like that they only hinted at the interest between Jim and Stella until they actually made it official. You know, they never really spelled that out too much. Oh, my favorite part, though. Brian James' death scene.
Yes.
Got to mention Brian James. He's also in the movie. He's one of the hunters. And the other hunter looked familiar, but I couldn't place him. I mean, he's one of these guys I've seen in a lot of movies, but I don't know his name.
But, yeah, Brian James' death scene is probably one of my favorite parts of the movie.
The assault on Cherokee Island, where Jim lives, they used fireworks, basically, to blow it up. And he's got this firework, his big rocket in his hands, and he calls to the other hunter. The other hunter just reflexively, yes, I almost just said that, just reflexively turns and shoots him.
He got it up in there, huh?
Bullet hits the firework, which goes off, and you think it's going to be a hot potato thing and he's going to live. Nope, blows him up.
Right, yeah. At that point, you weren't expecting anyone to actually die because they've had so much exchange of fire
and
everyone's lived. So yeah, it was kind of like, they finally did something.
Yeah. Another thing I didn't expect was the nudity.
Yeah, they were pretty...
It took a while, but they did get to it. The sex scene between Jim and Stella went on way too long, like comedically long.
I didn't mention the reporter. That was also kind of the villain in the story, too.
She's the actual villain, ultimately. Her and Donald Pleasance, of course. Actually, I don't know if Donald Pleasance is a villain. I mean, he tries to be, but it requires Powers Booth, who turns. So, and she turns, too, ultimately, yeah.
Pleasance is definitely the villain. He's the evil person that sits back and...
True. It just didn't work.
Wants someone to make a species endangered and willing... Mm-hmm. I mean... You know, you could just say Powers Booth was tempted by all the money and finally found his center in the end. Did what was right.
Now, possibly the most absurd thing in the movie, he's in bed with Stella. Jim is in bed with Stella once they finally get together.
Yeah.
And Mike, Powers Booth's character, it took me about half the movie to remember his name. He tries going after the egg. He's climbing up the mountain.
When he hears the eagle call.
Well, and he knocks some rocks around. He makes some noise, catches the eagle's attention, who, you know, obviously the eagle's starting to freak out because something's coming for it. Eagle starts calling. This snake and this parrot in Jim's place react to it. And Jim, off the island, however far away, can just sense that his animals are going wild.
He can really hear. Did he just really hear the cry of the fucking bird?
Yeah, yeah.
He
just kind of sensed it.
There's a disturbance in the force. Yes, man. Absurd is a very good way to put that.
And that was a really big bird's nest. Like, I guess eagles' nests are big, but.
They weren't worried about the kid busting in on them during that sex
montage. Well, he did say that. He's like, I don't want him to find me. Jim said, I don't want him to find us. And she's like, don't worry about it.
Okay, then.
Although, I don't know if I bought Mike's change of heart. He just kind of turns on a dime at the last minute and decides not to steal the egg.
It's so cheesy because they did the, you know, I trust you.
Yeah.
Like, everything was covered with a montage in this movie.
And oddly, I didn't hate it.
I mean, there were just, it was end-to-end montages.
And then, of course, he's climbing down the mountain when he decides he's not going to steal it. Jim sees him start shooting at him. Shoots him down.
He was a good mountaineer when he was
No. Jim shoots him down. He shoots the rope. And at that height, you'd think the water would break something other than his fall. I mean, it's a movie trope. Yeah, the water breaks his fall, he's fine. But water kind of becomes a solid at a certain velocity.
You just see Rucker Hauer thinking there, you know, oh, yeah, he'll just fall in the water.
And,
down a mountain.
Yeah. Like a couple of hundred feet. He would have broken something.
Sure.
And then, speaking of jumping in water... The movie basically ends with Jim, Stella, and the kid jumping in the water randomly.
Right. I have no idea why that would be the ending scene.
Oh, and then they go to Donald Pleasance's character, and he finds out what happened, and he's got that evil moment where he just, you know, looks angry.
And they show the empty spot in his collection.
Right. Sequels and remakes?
Sequels and remakes.
No sequel, obviously. It doesn't really leave room for one, though I thought they were going for one when they go to Donald Pleasance at the end. That looked like a nice little sequel. Until they show what happened. I don't know if I'd want to see a remake.
It'd be interesting to see if they, well, do it without the Rambo and Apocalypse Now tropes. But
I mean, that's, what is it then? You know?
Well, I mean, they seemed very ham-fisted in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really want to do this, you'd have to change the story where they actually are up against each other, the two of them.
Right. Yeah, they
more
didn't
than just, hey, you know, bosom buddies.
Right. Yeah, he didn't actually go for the egg until like 20 minutes until the end of the movie.
Right. Like, oh, this thing's about wrapping up. I better go for the eggs now.
Yeah. But it's so of its time and so just weird as it is. I kind of would like to see it left as is and not really remade.
I don't even think it's of its time, like I said.
Or maybe of the time a little earlier, yeah.
Such a 70s feel, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's a store in Dixie. They got the Confederate flags and everything.
On to Brains.
On to Brains.
I really liked it for the weirdness. It didn't make sense. There were a lot of inconsistencies, but I just had fun with just a thoroughly weird movie. I'm going 4.5.
I really loved the cast of this. I mean, I loved Powers Booth, what he did with what he had.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate, though, that nothing that his character does makes any sense.
No, no. That's like, part of the beauty to me.
I'm here to make all this money? No, I'm not here to make this money. I'm going to go through with this? No, I'm not going to go through with this. And of course, Howard's always enjoyable to watch in Pleasance, too.
Mm-hmm.
But good God, this movie needed a script or a reshoot or something. I'm going 2 Brains.
All right. And what have we learned?
We learned if you lose a quarter of your movie, you should fucking reshoot it.
And I learned that Rutger Hauer would be a great Kurtz in an Apocalypse Now remake. He's a bit old. He's in his 70s now, but I think he could still pull it off.
That's pretty much what he was in this. He was
Kurtz. Yeah, he was Kurtz. Yeah, yeah.
And Booth was Willard. I mean, there's no doubt that's what they were going for. And of course, Booth winds up joining him in the end, which is how they wanted to end the original Apocalypse Now anyway. So I don't know where they got that from or why, but I guess it was just to protect the eagle.
All right, so until next time, we'll be reviewing Surf Nazis Must Die, for obvious reasons. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. If zombietakeout.com doesn't work, because there seems to be a little glitch right now, and you want to actually go to the website, though nobody does, try zombietakeout.squarespace.com. That should work. Our domain host is having some issues.
Wow, we are just...
It might just be a brief glitch. I don't know. You'll also find in the movie list every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review up through the science fiction double feature. Day of the Earth Stood Still and Forbidden Planet. I have to think of the song to get them in order. And of course, the recommendations list. This was borderline. Well, I knew not borderline for me, but I knew this was going to be a maybe, maybe not. I wasn't sure how you were going to feel about it. I just loved the weirdness. Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said, but it was just so delightfully weird.
It was kind of a patchwork of different things just thrown together.
Of course, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1 or for the alphanumerical challenge.
You can shoot yourself in the leg.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
Rest in peace, Mr. Booth.
Yes.
Come on, Charlie. Get the hell out of here.
What's up? Welcome to episode 322. What's
Zombie
up?
Zombie